Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Concern from some, Hoff, and maybe even you to a certain extent, certainly more than me. I'm not worried at all. Maybe I should be, but I'm not. I still believe in this team. But the point about being concerned about them maybe not making the playoffs after the loss last night, coupled with the Giants win, the Giants now just three games back in the Mets for that final wild card spot.
Well, for me, Sal, the Mets' margin for error is shrinking here. And that's backed up by what the standings now look like. I'm not saying for sure that they're not going to be a playoff team. I think that they probably will be. I just believe too much in their top-level talent not to be able to find a way to win some of these games to become that third wild card. But the reality is that the margin has shrunk because too many facets of the Mets team, like too many times this year, has kind of really disappeared. The offense, invisible, just as the starting pitching's been stabilized thanks to the young kids. Now the bats are quiet, a little sloppier on the bases lately. You know, maybe Helsley is going to now get right, and maybe that's a really good sign of things to come.
Maybe a huge thing.
Yeah, that would be very big for them, but you still need leads to protect here, and obviously Diaz is still a beast, but if you're not, like, how many times, I can't prove it, but it's just like I remember feeling this several times. I can't tell you how many times I'm watching the Mets and I hear like Gary or whomever, Ron, Keith, say, yeah, we haven't seen Diaz. Like he's meaning they're coming back from commercial. He's on the mound. He's warming up. And they're like, yeah, he hasn't pitched since Tuesday and it's Saturday. Or he hasn't pitched since Monday and it's Friday. Like there's been a lot of games where the Mets have not had leads, where they haven't been able to deploy Diaz. So he's one of their greatest strengths, but you can't use him all the time if you can't hit, which means to me there's got to be great emphasis on having the manager hit the right buttons. I like Mendoza. I'm rooting for Mendoza. He really surprised me in a very good way fast last year. He's had a big step back this year. And when you're in a lot of 3-4, you know, or 1 or 2 run games, and you don't have a great bench, you can't be as sloppy as he's been this year. Some of the moves he's made has been baffling.
I thought last night he was bad, specifically with Acuna using him to pinch hit instead of saving him to pinch run, which could have changed the entire game last night. Mendoza, for me, is the last of worries. I have no issue with the way he's handled the bullpen. I think he's been dealing with a difficult hand with the starters for the most part, certainly prior to the rookies coming up. Guys are going three innings. I mean, he's been up against it. Has he been as good as he was a year ago? No question to me, he has been disappointing, just like the team has had a disappointing regular season from where they were a year ago and what the expectations were. But he's the least of my concerns. As a matter of fact, I would even say that my biggest concern is the offense. It's been starting pitching. Well, a lot of people are talking about that, the pitching this, the pitching that, bullpen this, bullpen that. I think it is clearly the inconsistency of the offense outside of Juan Soto, who has been once again on an elite tear. And you look at the numbers, obviously they're there. Lindor inconsistent. I trust Alonso too. He's done a good job. I should keep Soto and Alonso in the same category. Those who have been the main constants. Everybody else has been inconsistent. And even Soto has been inconsistent this year. But just overall, the offense is inconsistent. And that would be my primary concern because that's been their big, you know, runners in scoring position.
Yeah, it
was a huge thing. And then all of a sudden they turned it on. And now all of a sudden the bats have gone cold. Like, that's, to me, going to be the difference maker for this team.
Well, listen, there's a lot here, obviously. And I know one of the stats and hearing about it, reading about it. And I don't really know the answer. It was rectified for a minute. Now it's gone back to being a problem. Like, I don't know why the Mets, and again, this is admittedly a bit of a deeper dive, but it's pretty basic for them. I don't know why the Mets struggle so much against the fastball this year. You've heard them talk about this on the broadcast.
Mendoza says it a lot.
I know he does. He has said it a lot in postgame. And speaking of Mendoza, so I'm not trying to convert anybody. Like, I will tell you right now that if I had to give a grade for Mendoza, I'd give him a C-minus this year. That's where I stand right now. People don't agree. That's fine. But I'm going to incorporate Boone for a second just to illuminate one of my issues with Mendoza. The knock on Boone has always been too reliant on the numbers, or, like in the case of Volpe, too willing to ride somebody out who should clearly be on the bench, okay? That what you really don't hear about Boone, because I don't think it's really applicable, is in-game gaffes. Like just blatant mistakes, like, whoa.
Well, that's not true.
What the hell? No, I'm not saying he's perfect, dude.
Well, cost him a World Series last year. Well, Cortez and argue and move.
Oh, no, I crushed him on the when he got up the Grand Slam. There's no doubt about that.
I didn't have a problem with that. You did.
I'm talking about like night to night, like a pinch run or a pinch hit. And I'm not talking about the way the lineup is structured. I'm not talking about analytically driven things, right? Because I understand the knock on Boone, and I'm with it. I'm not with all of it, but I understand that, and I certainly agree with some of it. I feel like when I watch these teams every night like you do, I feel like Boone's problems are different than Mendoza's. Boone's almost happened before the game, World Series aside. I feel like Mendoza's mistakes come during the game.
That could be fair. My biggest issue with Boone is something that I think is a great strength of Carlos Mendoza. Holding guys accountable and being upfront and honest, whether it's with the media or the players themselves, not pulling any punches, not trying to sugarcoat things.
Yeah, he's a little different in that regard. I get you.
Yeah, that to me is the strength of Mendoza, where he's done that right out of the gate in year one. Even this year with the struggles, he's open and honest about it, where Boone, there's always the bug.
No, he protects him.
Oh,
but let me ask you this. If it doesn't lead to, for Mendoza, forget about Boone for a sec, I do agree. Like, Mendoza seems a little more raw and a little more real and a little more transparent during the post-game interviews. But if it doesn't equate to buttoned-up winning baseball, does it matter?
No.
All that matters.
We're going to see it. But we have to find... even with Boone, forever, it was always, I'm going to judge him on his managerial moves in the postseason. And so far, outside of last year, last year was the first year he got to the World Series. And then in the World Series, there were some issues. So as far as those specific moves, I bet that Carlos Mendoza never screws up the way he did last night, burning Acuna as opposed to keeping him on the bench for that exact situation. I bet he learned from that. I'm glad he learned from it last night and not in October in a series. So I would still trust that Mendoza will make the right decisions. I think, if anything, he's been too reliant on the analytics this year. Maybe they're getting more involved, where last year they let him be in.
Well, you always said you liked him because of the gut.
Yeah.
So, and there's been a little bit more of an attachment to the numbers. But yeah, hopefully you... By the way, it's a second year, so you're going to go through a curve where you think about your second year on the radio versus now. I mean, you just,
100%.
Things slow down. There's clarity. There's understanding.
Yeah. You think you know everything when you first start out. And then
you do,
learn,
and we really know nothing in hindsight. Think about that.
And by the way, like, that happens at the highest of levels with the NFL, where you had the Callahan of the Titans. Did you see him?
I did see. Didn't know the rule.
Dude, not knowing
the... I did see that.
Now, that's what happens when you hire a head coach.
That's unacceptable.
Sports Talk on WFAN is presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus. Yeah, he didn't even know the rule.
That's unacceptable.
He quote said one elbow doesn't equal 2 feet.
I know.
It was the exact opposite. John Madden taught us that 40 years ago.
Can you imagine if that was Dable or Aaron Glenn? I mean, I don't know about you, but I do. We would crush them.
And by the way,
for not knowing a rule,
it's not just him. It's all because to be fair to Callahan, he's also in real time in the game. The people in his
there's
headset,
a lot going on.
Like, so, yeah, but somebody's
got
to be.
You got
to
know the rule, though. But your support staff's got to make sure if you don't that they get it to you.
But
he's got to know the rule. He's the head coach.
But don't you think that maybe somebody made the mistake and he's covering for them? Like, there's got to be a chance where, okay, so let's say he was unsure of the rule.
Yeah.
And then somebody's telling him, well, he got the elbow in, but his feet weren't in. And then he's just saying, okay. Like, you kind of go with it. Like, sometimes Hoff will tell us something, and I'm like, all right, we go with it. But in reality, it's like, wait a second, I knew better than that. I don't know the exact. I would bet.
Hoff getting dragged for no reason.
Multiple, he's not even paying attention.
No, he's
multiple people, I think, made that mistake. Anyway, point is, that's what happens when you hire these young guys, and sometimes they don't know everything. So in Mendoza's case, it's his second year as being a big league manager. And by the way, he's more experienced than most because he worked his way up to being a manager.
Correct. He took the more conventional route, didn't come from the broadcast booth, didn't just go, taking off the shin guards and becoming a manager. I got you. But what I'm saying is this, so you would hope that you would learn from this. And I hope he does, and he probably will. But I also said, and this is part of the evaluation, is why I give him a C-minus so far. I don't think he's had a really good year at all. And, I want to get these calls. I'm curious where the Met fan is on the Mets and on the manager. But why didn't he learn when he didn't pinch run for Mendoza? For Marte on August 8th. It was the same. Now, Marte is faster than Mauricio. Like, Marte's sprint speed's more about 30-35 percentile, where, Mauricio right now is about 13%. So that's that. I get it. I get it. But he made the mistake on August 8th by allowing Marte to stay at second base, basing up the middle by Jeff McNeil, thrown out of the plate, game over, when you had Tyrone Taylor, who's 95 percentile. So he made the mistake in August. Now he made the mistake in September. That tells me he hasn't learned yet. But why would he learn in October?
Because here's why he made the mistake. Let's go a little bit deeper. Cedric Mullins is up. He's useless to a point where he can't even get a bunt down.
How do you bunt the pop-up? And I mean, by the way, and they nailed it. I don't mean to jump on you there, but this is important. Like, it's a sacrifice situation. Show the hands, get the barrel up so the ball goes down. This guy is almost like he was bunting for a hit, like the element of surprise.
Who are you fooling? Just get the bunt down. So Cedric Mullins is so bad, he can't, and I'm not trying to pick on him, it's just the reality.
He's been terrible.
He can't even bunt right now. The Mets' two alternatives to Cedric Mullins are supposed to be Jose Siri and Tyrone Taylor. Both are not with the club.
Understood.
So now Mendy's kind of up against it because he's shorthanded, and he's thinking in that moment, down 1-0, not to the ninth inning, he's thinking, I need offense now. Maybe Acuna against a lefty will give me a better chance to get on base than Mullins, and if he does get on, I could have him steal a base, and now we got a runner in scoring position, a base hit can tie the game. Mm-hmm. That's his thought process there. He's not thinking, I'm going to save this bullet for the ninth inning. It was incorrect, but he was being aggressive there, and that was his only option. Now, you could argue you should have gone with Mauricio. That's my issue, and he probably didn't because of the numbers or because he's thinking if he gets on, he's an automatic double because he's going to steal second base, whereas Mauricio can't. Then he uses Mauricio out of desperation because he's figuring, I got to do something. He's the next best guy that I have on the bench, and an upgrade over Alonso, as insignificant as it may be.
Well, you know, I could push back on the upgrade, although it's obviously provable that Mauricio's a little bit faster. Pete is actually a very smart, savvy base runner for a big boy. We know that. So I think that was a bit of a miscalculation. Listen, this is not game six of the NLCS where I'm getting on the air frying Mendoza for a move that I obviously very much disagree with, but you're judged on whether or not you get it right or you get it wrong. I mean, I could sit here and say, man, I had pretty sound logic laying the 1.5 points with the Ravens on Sunday night, and they look good for most, but did I win the bet or did I not? I lost the bet. So I understand what you're saying. Some bodies are not there, guys that they can use who both can run, different options. And I know what he was doing, but it still didn't work out.
Yeah. Well, I don't.
And it's got to work out for them to win.
That's where you and I would differ, is that I don't make that decision or judgment based off of results. I would make it based off of, regardless of how it turned out, it was the wrong decision to pinch hit Acuna as opposed to holding him back. Whether it worked or not, if Mauricio scored from first, I still think it was a mistake. Mm. Not just results based. Yeah. Either way, you know, Mendoza's going to have to prove himself, assuming that the Mets first, he's got to get his team there, and then he's got to do his job. BT and Sal on the Fan, our friends at Town Fair Tire, remind you that at Town Fair Tire, you always get the guaranteed lowest price on name brand tires from Connecticut to Maine. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. John is calling from upstate New York. What's up, John?
What's up, BT and Sal? Sal, I mean, I was on X last night scrolling throughout the game, and I see you tweeting that positive Tommy, saying log off, blah, blah, blah. But here you are on the air being positive. Which one is it? It's like, you know, I can't wrap my head around how you're supporting this team. I mean, I get it. I'm a diehard fan of the Mets, too. We're going to support our team. But this team is in deep trouble.
No, hold on. Time out. Mets fandom, from my perspective, has nothing to do with it. Do you know what does have? And I'm not being positive. I'm being real. If the playoffs ended today, and they do end in 18 games, the Mets are in the playoffs.
I understand that. We were also in the playoffs with 17 games to go, and we lost a 7-game lead.
Okay, so then why can't you think that they can do the reverse?
Because history repeats itself. Why would I be positive as a Mets fan when I have all this trauma as a Mets fan? Come on, man.
Because it's not
you know better than anybody.
No, John, you're right. I do. And that's why you should listen to me instead of fighting with me. This is not the same team in 2007. They're more talented. They're better.
But what shows you that they're more talented? Other than Soto, I get Soto. What shows you that they're more talented? Our bullpen is up and down. Ryan has, I mean, come on, man. He is just a mess. I get it. He had a great inning last night. But one inning opposed to however many bad games he's had is a
mess.
You're
focusing on Helsley. How about Diaz, Brooks Raley, and Tyler Rogers?
Diaz put on a magic trick on Friday night. He was lucky. He had
so that's not good enough for you. So Diaz being effective is not good enough for you. Rogers not good enough for you. Raley's not good enough for you. Soto, Lindor, Alonso being proven is not good enough for you. What do you want?
Okay, if they're all proven, then why are we in the position we are in right now?
They've been inconsistent. Which team would you want?
So then,
which team would you want to be a fan of? The Phillies? Would you rather be a fan of the team that's eight
it's
games?
It's not about being... No, it doesn't matter. We're in the third wild card spot with teams breathing down our neck.
John, who won
the division? We have all this star power, and we're not doing anything with it.
Who won the division last year, the NL East?
The Phillies.
And what happened in the first round that they played the Mets?
Right, we won, of course.
So then why are you getting caught up on the 8-game deficit?
Because no matter what, that can happen to us, too. Look at what we had a lead in the division, and what happened? The Phillies took us over. It's not about – you're going past history. It doesn't matter about that. The Mets have
you
a history.
You are going
of doing
on
it.
The history. You're referencing 2007.
No, I'm talking about last year, about what happened last year in the playoffs. The Mets have a history of doing this, completely blowing the lead. And that's what we do. That's what we're famous for doing. We've won two World Series in our franchise history. And you have faith in this team? We blow it every goddamn time.
He's got some fears, man.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, it's a good call. Appreciate the passion. I'm not so sure that this team's better than the 2007 team. I mean, not even to get into that necessarily.
That team was ravaged with injury down the stretch as well. And again, it's almost 20 years
either
ago.
Either way, like, I know.
What does that have to do with right now?
I don't think it should. That was my point.
Okay, well, that's my point.
You can't always tie it to history.
His whole premise is his life as a Met fan has sucked, so why do I believe in this team? Because I'm not like you. I'm realistic. That means when there's a time to be critical of them, I criticize as much or more than anybody else. When there's a time with legit reason to believe, I'm going to believe. Whereas others, and I'm not going to name names, others will just go over the top like John and be negative for no reason. They are right now in the playoffs. Just like I said a month and a half ago, when everybody else was panicking. What was the word that Vaccaro used to describe them? It was a harsh word.
Was it the P word?
No.
A couple weeks ago, right?
Right? Yeah, couple weeks ago? He was saying the type of the brand of baseball they were playing. It was a harsh word.
Yeah, it was.
No. It was even worse than pathetic. Whatever it was, it was a scathing word to describe the way the team that the Mets are.
Mm-hmm.
You could say they're playing that way, but that's not the team that they are. So I'm fighting it off then, and that was when I was looking at its worst. And now they've gained ground as far as being comfortable in that third spot. Again, does it mean they're going to get to the playoffs? Who the hell knows? I believe, and I'm giving you legit reasons why. And the difference between me and Positive Tommy is he's tweeting something positive about a game that was all negative. Like, the only positive was, in fact, Ryan Helsley from last night. You want to throw in McClain as well?
Sure.
Yeah, but okay, but we expect that from McClain. Positive Tommy's his own entity. He's never critical of the team. I am not that. I'm giving you legit reasons to believe. They're three games up in the playoffs right now. Why would I expect that? There's 18 games to go. They've held the playoff spot the entire year, as bad as they've been.
I appreciate that you're not tying yourself to the tortured fate. I mean that, because that's how I operate as a Jets fan. It's the same premise, right? So I get it. I can relate to it. And there's two very different arguments here, or conversation points. One, are the Mets going to make it? I think that they probably will. The other conversation, which is just much deeper in terms of pure baseball stuff, is they're not as good as they're supposed to be. They're fighting to win 86, 87 games. They've got a massive bloated payroll. They needed three rookies to come up and save them from a rotational perspective. They need to go out and get three or four arms in the pen to stabilize that. They've been up and down and maddeningly inconsistent all year. So I think that last caller's name was John. I would probably meet somewhere in between. Forget about up 7-17. Forget about that nonsense. This year's team is good, but they're also very flawed and very inconsistent. What that means in a month, I don't know. But it wouldn't give me supreme confidence as a Mets fan, nor would I latch on to that fatalistic view just because I'm a Mets fan, that makes sense.
I think you said it perfectly. I don't think there's anybody that could argue the Mets have not had a disappointing regular season. It has been a disappointing regular season. All I'm saying is think about how far the Mets organization has come to that a disappointing regular season can result in a playoff berth. Like, I don't know if you guys know this or not. The Mets have been around since 62. You can count on your fingers how many times they've been in the damn playoffs. Like, it's a big deal for this team to make the playoffs, let alone in consecutive years, which has only happened twice in the franchise history. Hoff mentioned it before. They're on the verge of doing something they've never done before, making it 3 out of 4 years. So that's a big deal. Now, is it as good as everybody expected in the regular season? No. But if they get to the playoffs, Everything starts with a clean slate, and they have just as good a chance. Doesn't mean you have to think that they're favorites or anybody else. They have just as good a chance as everybody else. The Dodgers aren't having as good a regular season as anybody thought they were either. But guess what? You get in the postseason, they can do damage. The Brewers are far exceeding the expectations based on the regular season. Guess what? Come October means squat. I don't love it, but that's the way that the sport is. Get in and you have a chance. So the regular season, as long as you get to the playoffs, as frustrating and as inconsistent and as down as it may be in accordance with the expectations, still going to be a success if they make the playoffs.
I know Hoff wanted to jump in. Go ahead, Hoff.
Just really quick, because I think both of your points are perfect. My one question to both of you, if you could think about this. This year, unlike last year where there was big games and the Mets seemed to be winning big games every single day going into the final stretch of the season and then making the playoffs and all that other stuff, this year, how many big games have they won? It's very reminiscent of when they were trying to win the division in 2022 to the Braves, and they couldn't pull it off. And they collapsed at the end, and they went to the wild card. This, now they're just fighting for the last playoff spot. They haven't won big games. Every time there's a big game, they lose. They don't show up.
They just swept the Phillies 2 weeks ago. That was two weeks ago.
What about yesterday?
I feel what's kind of...
What about Cincinnati? Dude, they were in Cincinnati. Yeah.
They got shut down by a good pitcher. It happened.
Great American Ballpark. Yeah. Toronto and the Reds were putting up 20 runs a game because that's what you do there. They put up, like, what, 5, 6, 7 runs in 3 games?
I would just add this real quick. Like, to me, and I'm not going to use the word ruined because their season's not ruined because it's not over yet, but... It's not over by a mile. But I don't think it's the Mets' inability to win big games that's kind of giving us, throwing us a loop here or a curveball. I think it's the Mets' inability to beat teams they're supposed to stomp.
Yeah, I know.
That's really put, like, whether it's the Nats, whether it's 3 or 4 to the Marlins, whether it's teams like, whereas with the Yankees, up until recently, the Yanks were feeding on the dirt. They were getting smoked by the good teams. It's the complete opposite.
Well, that's why I get scared. There's 3 games at the end of the season against the Marlins. This is 2007, 2008 all over again. You know, I may break down on the air with you guys and cry.
Might?
Yeah.
You have?
Well, look,
if they miss the postseason this year, it would be a disaster.
Ooh.
A disaster. And I will go nuts and rip everybody involved. Like, obviously that comes.
Of course.
But why would I do that now or even
you shouldn't
fear
do it
that?
Now.
If I truly believe, like Hop believes or John believes, now they didn't give me good enough reason, but if I truly believed that this team weren't any good and wasn't going to make the postseason, I tell you, I truly believe there's nothing to worry about in that regard. Are you getting nervous? Yeah, sure. Like, you'd rather be in first place in the wild card or in first place in the division as opposed to the last team in right now, 3 games up. Right,
of course.
That's what they are. But they're also three games back at the second spot. Like, there are still other playoffs. They could still catch the Padres. They play the Padres as well, so
they could climb.
I just don't believe. Hey, maybe I could be proven wrong. It has happened before.
No,
but I am believing in this team in what I believe to be legitimate reasons to believe in this. Nick is in St. Augustine, Florida. What's up, Nick?
Hey, what's up, guys? One thing with the Cedric Mullins, I mean, he's batting .289 against lefties. He's not great, but he's better than Acuna against lefties anyway. And they needed to save Acuna for the end of the game. I know there wasn't much left on the bench, but with the splits, you're better off just leaving Mullins in. Second, the Mets are not a good team. They're decent at best. They haven't been good for months. Last year, if you compare it to last year, by this time last year, you felt really good about the Mets. Maybe you were on the cusp again about making the playoffs, but you knew if they made the playoffs, that team could do damage. This team has not showed us they could do damage. They haven't had a winning month in 3 months. It's a bad team almost. You want to say borderline bad? Fine. But they're not a good team right now.
Nick, let me ask you a question. So what do you think is the Mets' ultimate strength? What part of their team is the best part of their team?
That's a great question. There is no ultimate strength. Right now, there is none. I would say Diaz. I mean, if you want to, you can't even say they're hitting because it's so inconsistent and it popped up for about a month.
Yeah.
So you want me to say the best thing? Diaz. That's it. The starting pitching, you got McLean. We'll see what the younger guys do now.
Yeah.
But they don't have a strength. That's why they're not a good team. They're not a good team at all. They're a decent team. If they make the playoffs, can they get hot with some of the players that they have? Yes. It's a roll of the dice. It'll be lucky if that happens. It's going to be against the mean because right now they're just not a good team at all. They haven't been a good team really all year except for the first 2 months. And even then when they were winning,
were they a good team last year?
Yes.
Oh, they barely made the they made the playoffs on the last day of the year. You're aware of that, right?
Yep.
They were down to their final out against the Brewers. So they were a good team last year.
Months?
They were so good last year that they barely made the playoffs on the final day of the year, and then they barely beat the Brewers. They were so good last year, though. They barely made the playoffs.
The team in baseball since June 1st, and from June 1st on, they did nothing but win and had the best record in baseball. And had to catch up and will wind up with more wins last year, 89, than they will this year. They're not hitting 89 if their lives depended on it. So, yes, they were a better team last year and more consistent last year. They had two really bad months last year and then were a very good team the whole year. This, you're looking at the opposite. And even when the Mets were good for the first 2 months of the season,
they still weren't hitting. Nick, you care more about what happens from June on. And that's fine. I choose to factor in the whole season. Kill me for that I like to factor in April and May. I mean, it is, in fact, part of the Major League Baseball season. So last year, the first 2 months didn't matter, and the Mets were the best team in baseball. This year, the first 2 months don't matter, where the Mets now have been the worst team since June 13th, whatever it may be. From April till June 13th, the Mets were one of the best teams in baseball. And they've righted the ship after going the wrong way quickly from June 13th on. They've leveled out. They're not going to barely make the postseason the way that they did a year ago. So to me, I think they have more talent this year. So we just disagree.
I think they've got more talent, but I understand the psychology. Maybe not so much tapping into like Hoff and some others about the torturous past in a lot of ways of the Mets here. But I think it's easier, and I understand this and I agree with this. Like, if I'm looking at both seasons here, yes, I do think this version has more talent. I do. So I grant you that right away. But when you start the season poorly, like they did a year ago, and you go on a ride, a multi-month ride where it's good baseball and you're winning and the vibes are good, it feels more believable, more tangible, all right, more evidence as to why, all right, I could see us doing something in October. As opposed to this year, which doesn't mean that they won't do anything in October, but I believe it's harder to jump on board without any wavering because they've been so spotty for so long. It's flipped. Now, it could equate to the same script. I'm going to grant you that. Although I don't think they won the same amount of games as last year. But sure, they could get to the NLCS this year or beyond and win the World Series. But the holes and the weaknesses have been on display for successive months, and that jars the confidence. And I get it.
Yeah, I don't. I don't get it. Because you look at every baseball. Like, I'm not sure what people are looking for here. You look at every. You don't think the Phillies have flaws?
Well, I'm not saying
weaknesses.
That.
Oh, but so I'm.
Well,
like,
let me look at the Phillies
so
month by month.
But
I don't think they've had the fluctuations, to answer you directly. They have flaws. First of all, Trey Turner, who's got the highest batting average of baseball, might not be ready for October.
Right.
Phil's going to have some issues.
They had some bullpen flaws, too. And I guess what they did, they signed David Robertson, who was available sitting there.
Well, and they traded for Duran. I get it. Like, I think it's fair to criticize David Stearns for not doing enough at the trade deadline. I've done that. I'm not saying that. His trades have worked out so far to have been a bust. Season's not over yet. And even if it is, the Mets are in the postseason. Like, I'm not sure what people want. What do you want? A team that's going to win 120 games? Show me the team that's going to win 100 games this year.
Well, I don't think there is one. I'd have to really look closer.
Milwaukee's got 89 wins.
Milwaukee might, but there's not many. There's not a dominant team, to your point. I'm with you. But here's the difference, all right? Now, all right, I just picked the Phillies, right? Phillies have an 8-game lead here. They're not going to win the division. I think everybody knows that, unless you're just holding out hope, which is fine. But the Phillies have had only one sub-500 month. And that was in July. So their craters haven't been so overwhelmingly in the face of their fans, where I believe their record is a little bit more believable right now because their confidence hasn't been jarred.
Right.
The Mets have had multiple, I think it's four. It's at least three.
Right. But,
months
but
where they've been below 500, Sal.
But when you bring up the Phillies, I'm going to punch back with the argument.
I know what you're gonna say. I know.
So then if the Phillies are that good and that consistent and their flaws are limited and they're more believable, how come they can't beat the Mets then? How come they've had an issue where they needed just one win at Citi Field to really put the fork in the Mets? They got swept.
I'm being fair. I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Mention last year, where in the postseason they were disposed, not in a 5-game hard-fought series.
No, they beat them easy.
They were wiped
away. They pushed
them
aside. There's
games.
No doubt. Now, what I would say is let's see what happens next 3 games.
Yeah.
Now,
okay.
If the Phillies win 3, I don't think they're going to sweep the Mets. If they sweep the Mets, that's a different discussion. If the Phillies win 3 of 4 based on their consistency throughout the season, even though the Mets obviously punked them last year and most of this year before this latest series, well, then maybe there's some more evidence that, all right, that's maybe the Phillies are just better this year. I'm not prepared to say that in totality, What I am prepared to say, because the numbers bear this out and it's irrefutable, they've been much more consistent. What does that mean in a month? Not necessarily anything.
That's my issue. And by the way, they might sweep the Mets. And if they do, the Mets are going to be in trouble as far as their postseason spot goes. But guess what? Even if the Mets do get swept, they're still going to be in a playoff spot. I mean, even if they got swept by the Phillies, then it's going to be 15 games to go. And at worst case, they're going to be tied for the playoff spot with the Giants with the tiebreaker edge over the Giants. Now you're going to have 15 games to go. Hey, they'll be in a similar spot like last year. Maybe fans will be happy. Maybe they could get Grimace out to throw the first pitch, because that's the guy who Met fans love. I mean, the one guy that was beyond criticism, except for me, was Grimace. Everybody else is getting ripped. Lindor, Soto, Mendy, Diaz, you name a pitcher, he's getting ripped. Grimace is the one guy last year that was absolved of all the criticism. Maybe they should bring him back. Everybody loved last year. Two guys, Grimace and Jose Iglesias. Those are the guys that Met fans want to see back this year. So why spend $765 on Juan Soto when you could just have Grimace for nothing? Have him throw out the first pitch for a little promo, or bring back Iglesias for a few million bucks.
He is a winner. He's got that winning DNA, Grimace. He's a guy that I want in my clubhouse, Sal.
Host of the Best Football Show podcast, Insider Calls, brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Baldy, good to have you back with us. I know you did the game in Washington with the Giants and Commanders. Was it even uglier being there for it than it was on TV?
Yeah, for any Giant fan, it was uglier being there. And there was a lot of Giant fans that showed up. A lot of blue in that stadium on Sunday. It was every bit as ugly on Sunday as what you felt watching it on TV. And it was even worse when I went back and studied it and watched it. It was just terrible football.
Was it a combination of just uninspiring play calling, Russell not seeing things, the old line? I mean, what exactly was it? Besides maybe everything.
Well, it's everything. I mean, if you just go back to first and goal at the one.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like that sequence of plays frustrated me more than anything. That's a 7-0 game. You're right in the game. You got a pass interference call, whatever. You got hands to the face. You got a first down at the one. And they call a play for a rookie tackle.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Who's tackle eligible, probably the first time in his life he's ever reported in, I'm eligible, number 71. And you run the play for Marcus Bowe, and Washington is watching it. They don't let him off the line of scrimmage, and Russell's got no place to go with the ball. Like it wasn't a trick play to Washington. It wasn't anything. They were ready for it. You know, that sequence was just awful. They came away with nothing there. Like that, just... I mean, they ended up quarterback sneaking because they couldn't gain a yard and a couple other. They went to the quarterback sneak and that worked twice, and that's always a pretty safe play right there in that situation.
Yeah, but Baldy, real quick though, because the schematics of that play, like, I mean, wow, we're getting this creative the first week. I mean, this would come out, dude. How about you just say hike and you shove it down somebody's throat? To me, you got to set a tone, and to me, when you call a play like that, you're basically telling your offensive lineman, we don't think you can get a yard. I mean, what kind of message is
that? I agree.
That?
In fact, I think I said that in the air. Like, I think I was with Chris Carino announcing it, and I think I actually said that. Like, there's no need to trick anybody. This is week one. Like, you've been spending all offseason telling you how you've upgraded the offensive line and all these different positions. Okay. You got a great opportunity. You had these scrimmages against the Jets. You did short yardage. You did goal line. Like, go make it pay off. Go get a yard. I mean, when you can't gain a yard when you need a yard, you're not a good football team.
How much of the fault of the Giants' struggles is because of Andrew Thomas not being there?
It's some. I mean, Andrew Thomas, like, Hudson did not play well. I wouldn't say anybody played well up front across the board. But Andrew Thomas, he makes a difference. Like, he's an elite player. Protection's probably a little bit better than it would have been. Maybe in the run game, they would have been a little bit better. But it doesn't really account for just a dreadful showing all the way around.
The Giants' run defense is obviously behind their pass rush. I didn't know that it would quite be this far behind it again. Is that going to be short off, or is this going to be a week-to-week issue where it's just that bad?
Well, you took a kid in Ja'Cory Merritt, you know, Kroski Merritt, that nobody ever heard of, seventh round pick, didn't even play in college. And he looked like he's probably their starting running back. Now, they know a lot more about him than the Giants did. But, I mean, he the quarterback is elite, and so he got his scrambles. But, you know, anytime you look up, I don't care how you do it, but you look up at the end of the day and they run for 220 yards against you, nothing's fixed from a year ago, nothing. So you can I felt like Dexter had no influence in that game at all, Dexter Lawrence. And he's supposed to be the monster in the middle. And I didn't feel like Dexter in the pass game, in the run game. I mean, I don't have any problem calling him out here on the air. Like, I didn't think he showed up. This is a Washington offense line that's upgraded for sure. Left tackle, right tackle, rookie. But, you know, this is NFC East football. You don't run for 220 yards against a team in the NFC East. You're just not supposed to do that.
We were told, Baldy, that it was going to be different. BT and Sal on the fan, we're talking about Brian Balding. We're told that it was going to be different this year. Fans were getting excited, maybe just about Jackson Dart and the preseason, the feel. But realistically, going into these first two games of the year, outside, road games, but inside the division with the Washington, with Dallas, and then you see that, and then you see Daniel Jones have success in week one. Like, it's year four here. I was blaming the coach yesterday. Is this primarily on the head coach?
Well, when you have a performance like that and you can't score a touchdown, and it's on the coach. Like, I watched Daniel Jones' game. He played great. I haven't seen Daniel Jones play that great. But I'll say this. The scheme of allowing Daniel Jones to play where, okay, this is who's going to be open on this play. Throw it right here. He did all of that. And he's got an elite tight end in Tyler Warren. That made a difference. But I thought Daniel Jones played as fast and free and loose as I've seen him. And I thought how they schemed it, whether it was half field reads or this is where attacking coverage with this route combination and this is where you go with the ball, he followed. It was like paint by numbers. He made it look really easy.
So what about Jackson Dart? Because to me, that's the final thing here, Baldy. It's been 4 years. I've seen different quarterbacks already. I don't need to see more other than if Jackson Dart is the real deal or not. To me, that would be the one thing that could save Dable. You told us last week, maybe you're thinking week five, where are you at with when the Giants might turn the reins over to Jackson Dart?
I wouldn't wait anymore. I just wouldn't waste anymore. Like, the guy's talented. He's played in the SEC for 3 years. He's been in two major college football programs. Why is it that J.J. McCarthy in his first NFL start can go out and do what he did in the fourth quarter? Why does Bo Nix take a team to a playoff? You know, I mean, look at that. Jaden Daniels, the offense rookie of the year. Like, these kids are ready to play. They're just more advanced than they have been in the past. To me, I would take the reins off. Troy Aikman was 1-15 his rookie year. He went to the Hall of Fame. Like, I can give you, for every guy you tell me that got ruined because he played too soon, I'll give you another guy that flourished because he did play. And here's the danger. If you sit there and go, okay, Russell's our guy, and we've seen what Russell is, enough. But if you say, well, we don't want to damage him. Well, what if he can win you games? What if he's ready? That's the conundrum. For everybody in that organization who's just, like, literally, I mean, they're like the walking dead over there right now, I'm sure. But, like, everybody in that organization over there, what if he is ready? And what if you can beat Washington? And what if you can beat Dallas? And this kid's on the sideline. Like, that's like, you know, we're getting to that point right now where you go, screw it. Let's put him out there. Let's play him. Because I think he's going to be a difference maker.
All right, Baldy, a couple of quick things on the Jets here. BT and Sal Baldinger, of course, with us every Tuesday during the week, during the football season, breaking down the film, things that we might not see. How much of what Fields showed is real?
All of it. Like, I thought he was fantastic.
Talk to me.
I thought it was all real. The touchdown throw, to Garrett Wilson was the right read. It was a deep cross. He got good protection. He made the right. He threw the guy open. You can easily screw that throw up. You can, like, try to, like, make it perfect. He let Garrett go get it. His the extension of plays when it was time to do it was really good. Ball placement to different guys, I thought it was really sharp. I mean, T.J. Watt is sitting there waiting for him on that read option that he scores on. He's sitting there waiting on the play. And Justin just, you know, that's a defensive player of the year. As good as there is in his business, he ran right around him like he was standing still.
Yeah.
Like, it was impressive. And the offensive line was really, like, I think Tippmann is a much better guard than center.
Okay.
I feel bad for Ali Vera Tucker, But I think they're lucky that they have Tippmann there because they played really well up front.
Yeah, and I was looking at some of the numbers with Membu, who was the highest graded offensive lineman of rookies. I think he had a 90.3 PFF grade. Saucehead was the number one rated cornerback during week one there. So it was certainly some good storylines. They just looked like, number one, they had more energy. They had more conviction in what they want to do. They actually looked like a football team, but there are elements of concern. The corner opposite Sauce, don't love the third level. Who's the second receiver? If I ask you right now, Boldy, the biggest issue for the Jets moving forward is going to be what?
Well, Brandon Stevens at the other corner looks like a problem.
Yep.
Like, I mean, look, he has played in Baltimore. I mean, 2 years ago, they led the league in sacks. They led the league in takeaways. You can benefit a lot, great deal, you know, when you have consistent pressure up front. And I'm not saying that, I mean, Baltimore didn't make any effort to try and keep him. I think that's a problem. DJ was really good for his time there in New York. And I think that's a little bit of a drop off. And then, I don't know, like, who is the second receiver?
It might be the tight end. Might be Mason Taylor.
It's going to be. Yeah, I think Mason Taylor is going to be that guy for sure.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. And Josh Reynolds has a role, but he's more of a three than a two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you like him. He's good. He's a good blocker. He does the right thing. He knows the plays. But he's not. If they want to take Garrett out, like, who's going to go win? That's going to be a problem. Because you can't just count on Justin Fields to run and extend plays all the time. The defense is going to, like, start spying him and prevent him from doing some of those things he did on Sunday. And then, honestly, Xavier Gipson came here as a nice story, and he had a great play the first game he ever played in.
Yeah, Bills.
Laying that ball on the carpet in that situation.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like, what are you getting out of him? Because you can't, your returner can't turn the ball over in that situation.
I said I would have cut him. And I know that that's incredibly insensitive. I don't say that much, but you're trying to change a culture, and he has had ball security issues before. I would have cut him today. You can find somebody who's equal.
No, I agree. I mean, the return game's important, but is he a difference maker in the return game? And so sometimes you just send a hard message. Like, I don't disagree with you. Jimmy Johnson had done that in the past. Different coaches have done that. To just say, like, they had a great chance to win that game against a really good team. And that play really killed them right there. That was the heartbreaker in that game. And look, these games are coming down. We saw on Sunday night with Baltimore and Buffalo. Like, one turnover in a game right now can flip the whole game. And so it flipped that game on Sunday. That's a shame because they played well enough to win.
BT and Sal on the Fan. We're talking with Brian Baldinger. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. You mentioned at Baldy that you believe it was real with Justin Fields. What's been the difference in your mind from watching him with Chicago, Pittsburgh a year ago, and now with the Jets? Is it just coaching? Is he matured? What's the difference with Justin Fields?
I think some of it is Tanner Engstrom, the offense coordinator. He did a lot of really good creative things. They miss those two coaches in Detroit. They couldn't score in Detroit the other day up in Green Bay. But I thought the way that he uses motions, the way that he protected the edges, like, it was really solid up front all game long against elite pass rushers. And you can't say that TJ changed the game or Alex Highsmith or Cam Hayward. Like, they didn't. And I think it started with protection, and then the way that they leak guys out late for a safety valve. Like, I think they're really in concert with one another. Tanner and Justin together.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I'm not looking at the film like you do. I mean, you're as good as anybody in the business doing this. But the one thing that I noticed from my couch, and I said this to Sal yesterday, is that Chicago Bears Justin Fields, things break down. He's trying to be an athlete, which you respect, trying to make something happen. Eyes are down. The new Justin Fields, he's extending the play, and he's keeping his head upfield. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. I mean, he did some of that in Chicago, too. But the offense made no sense in Chicago for much of the time he was there. You know, there's got to be a rhythm and a timing to every offense. We all see it when the offense moves. And when it doesn't move like the Giants on Sunday, you're like, something's not right. And you saw it in Chicago last night. The rhythm between the quarterback and the receivers, it just isn't there. Now, maybe it'll get there. Maybe it's week one. But I feel like They're in lockstep with one another. And the other thing is, Justin's a very serious student. But he reminds me a lot of Jalen Hurts in that regard. Like, he's a very serious guy.
Okay.
He's not out there joking around, clowning around. He doesn't do any of that. He's a very serious – he wants to be good. And I think they're coaching him hard, and I think the coaching matters. And I think what they put out there on tape – like, you can't expect to score 30-plus points every week. But I think they have an offense – that, you know, between the formations, the motions, and the shifts, it made sense to me.
Last one for you, Baldy. Which combo would you be more excited about? Dable and Dart or Glenn and Fields?
That's a good one.
Well, I mean, just based off 1 week, I would take, you know, of Glenn, AG, and Justin. But I'd like to see... I'd like to see the rookie in there for the Giants. Like, I think he's going to be – like, everything can change. Malik Nabers isn't arguing with the coach on the sideline. Like, all the things we saw. Like, I think it all changed. This kid, like, some – maybe I'm dead wrong on this guy, but I've been around him enough. Like, this guy is a bright bulb about the game of football. And his movement, his eyes, his – what he sees, like, he plays with a swagger – and that's how you have to play. You have to attack. You can't sit back and try to, well, I'm going to clear the rush, and then when I see, then I'm going to make the throw. Like, enough of what we saw on Sunday.
Sounds like Aaron Glenn and Jackson Dart would be your choice of combination, Baldy. Thank you.
I'd like to see that, too.
Thank you, Baldy. You're the best. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. You got me.
Nice.
That was Odyssey NFL Insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide for your insurance and financial needs. Nationwide is on your side. Got to be encouraged there if you're a Jet fan hearing Baldy speak.
I am. My life keeps singing it, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, I like that about Justin Fields, the fact that he's no-nonsense guy. Go out there and work. You just need him to be able to keep up that type of performance. Again, if he does that every week, he's going to be in the MVP conversation, but even a little bit less than that.
And think about this. They're going to play defenses that eventually that aren't that good. Steelers have, you know, a bunch of Hall of Famers. Like, the Steelers are good.
Yeah.
They're well-coached. They're well-prepared. They've got good athletes. They've got good players. So, again, to replicate that every week, especially this week against the Bills, not real. I mean, I'm not looking to that, but I cannot wait. Let me put it this way. I can't wait to watch him play a second game as a Jet.
Which is one of the last times we said you can't wait to watch the Jets play a football game. And then the other thing is he's talking about Jackson Dart. He would do it now.
Yeah, I know.
And
I
he
know.
Was the one who said
he
it
was
last
early
week.
Last week with us,
yeah.
too.
Yep. And I was like, what?
He's basically saying Russ is done.
That's it.
It looks like he's done.
Hey, sign me up. We'll get to that when we come back, the conversation about what would be your breaking point to definitively go with Jackson Dart.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.